Lapine City Council regular session of July 22nd, 2009 is called to order at 6:18 p.m. I lied. I said we'd be back here at 6:15. I do that sometimes. Okay. We will establish a quorum and take roll. I'll start at my left.
City Recorder Luana Damavell.
Mayor Kitty Shields.
Councilor Barbara Hedges.
Councilor Adele Malanen.
Councilor Douglas Ward.
Administrative Assistant Patty Morgan.
Right, we have a quorum, and City Attorney Green is absent by prior arrangement. We're good. All right, Citizen DeBone, would you like to lead us in the bike salute, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right, Council, we do have one added agenda item. As you'll recall, it was moved over from the work session. That will become item 10A, agree to community wildfire protection plan with authorization for mayor to sign. And we have our consent agenda next. I think that'll probably be pretty quick. Two sets of minutes. Did anyone have any changes, corrections, etc. on the minutes?
No.
No.
All right. I have a couple of them. On page 4 on the Joint CMPC, the Pine City Council joint meeting. Again, page 4 at the top, the line that said 1, 2, 3, 4 lines down where it says biogreen project per Mayor Shields' request. The possessive there should be S-H-I-E-L-D-S apostrophe or S-H-I-E-L-D-S apostrophe S.
Which way do you want?
It can be either way. Either way is correct, but it's not correct S-H-I-E-L-D apostrophe S because the last name is Shields. So that needs corrected. Page 5, on the same minutes, I didn't notice this before when I looked through it. Mayor Shields stated that the council will determine which councilor who will be part of that stakeholders group.
No.
So the who needs to go. And on okay, we have two sets of minutes here, I think. Our regular session meeting minutes of July 8th, page 8. And I apologize, Adele or Patty. I didn't do that. I don't think I noticed this the first time I looked through them. On page 8, under the Wildfire Protection Plan section, the second paragraph, Mayor Shields requested that the presentation be narrowed down to how it affects the city of Lapine. That should be affects. If you affect something, then you get an effect. And that's all I have. So if council agrees, do you agree with my correction?
Yes.
Yes. Then we can entertain a motion to accept the consent agenda with corrections to the minutes as noted.
I would so move.
I second. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor, I'll take a roll call vote, please.
Counselor Ward, yes.
Counselor Mullanin, yes.
Counselor Hedges, yes.
Mayor Shields, yes. Motion passes unanimously. Okay. And the next item, we have a presentation from BioGreen Sustainable Energy Company, and I believe that should be one word, right? BioGreen?
Correct.
So, we already know that will be corrected when it comes up again. All right, and you're all set up and ready to let us hear from you. All right.
Thank you. I really appreciate the counselors allowing us to do this presentation for you guys today. I appreciate your time. I appreciate everybody coming here to listen to the presentation. Some of you are familiar faces that have heard it a few times, and so I appreciate you guys going through this with us again. A couple things about the presentation. It takes a little bit, and the questions that people may have, if we could hold those to the end, because a lot of it may be addressed with certain people as they come up to present. And also, you know, the questions are very important to us. So Kristen will actually have a sign-up sheet for those to put their contact information down. So we'll make sure everybody's questions are answered today. And if we can't do it today, we'll have those answers for you. I guess starting off with the presentation, you know, I was trying to think of a way how to introduce BioGreen and what we're about and about this project. And I think it's fitting to talk about the first time that I met Citizens of Lapine, and my first experience was with Luana and Kitty, and having that opportunity to sit down and talk about the possibilities of this project and what it meant. And I had no idea what I was walking into. I said my piece. I got sat back on my heels, and they were very pleasant and asked very, very good questions. I walked out of there with a limp and my tail between my legs. I'm pretty sure I forgot my name until I got to the trip.
We told him all the kinds of questions he was going to be faced with.
No, it was great. And I think that it absolutely solidified my resolve that this is the exact community that I want to bring this project into, because that's the same type of community that I came from in Scappoose, Oregon. My grandpa was a logger, a fisherman. My dad was a logger, his way through school, fisherman. My uncle worked at a mill for over 30 years. We had that small town community feel. We know what it's like for the economy to affect industry and how that affects families. And that's a lot of the values that I want to put into this company as we present this and build this out. And that's what I wanted you to know about us. My own background, I've been around construction and land clearing for over 13 years. The last 2 years I've spent in the forest products industry, actually dealing with selling and handling of biomass to major consumers like Georgia-Pacific, Longview Fiber. So I had a very quick education on what sustainable supply was and how much supply we actually have to operate our own. And part of the reason why we have this plant ready to go now is because that market, that hog fuel market that we relied on for our own business model, I mean, is volatile at best. And for us to really take advantage of the opportunities of clean, renewable energy, we had to create a demand for that biomass or we would lose that supply. And we have to have a home for it. And the experience that I've gained is that the biomass, because of our operations that have been around for over 40 years of the companies we've been currently running, I mean, the demand, the biomass is totally scalable upon demand. So if I need to put this project here in Lapine, because of our operations, I would have more than enough fuel to run this thing by ourselves, let alone what market we'll create for the public, for the Forest Service, if ever they decide to start thinning, which they will. And that's part of who we are. Another key thing for us to be able to put this thing together is the folks that we have around us, our team of experts that we have hired, L.D. Jellison, that is nothing but specialized in biomass. He's got over 35 years experience in the industry. Wellens, who's going to build out our boilers. They have over 200 of these facilities around the world in operation. We have the right legal staff, the right environmental staff, and these are the people that make up BioGreen. And my first Central Oregon hire has been Clark Jackson, right here, that was the State of Oregon Regional Business Development man, and I'm very fortunate to have his skill on board, so I look forward to seeing what Clark brings to the table here. Okay, so what BioGreen does is we are creating and managing biomass energy projects in the Pacific Northwest. Lapine is by far my pet project. I have other projects that are in the works right now because of the amount of biomass that I control. So we're going to develop those green energy projects. So our goal is to obviously generate the green energy to replace the non-renewable energy. And it's very important to me that this has a large impact on the communities that we go into, a positive impact. We're going to bring jobs and revenue into the towns, and that's part of the value of BioGreen. So, question is about biomass. What that biomass is forest residuals, such as small trees, undergrowth, slash piles and thinnings. You've got urban wood waste from the recycling centers and transfer stations, yard debris and construction material. You also have agricultural waste, which will make a good biomass fuel, orchard removals, rice hulls, and fruit pits. Like I discussed, the companies that we are currently operating, they've been in business for over 40 years, and right now, we're currently handling, producing probably a little over 20,000 truckloads of biomass fuel for the customers that we service right now, and because we have poultry chipping operations and we do own our own timberland, we haven't even tapped that resource in this area, which I'll explain why this map is important, but the center of this map is Lapine. There is a 50-mile radius around the center right here. To give you an idea of the scale of sustainability, to answer that question, this little circle inside this 50-mile radius circle around Lapine is what this plant would need to run forever. That's the scale of what we're talking about for sustainability. That dimension right there. And 50 miles is the optimum, that's your primary resource area for a plant. And I'll get to that in a minute. Okay, so we talked about more fuels available out in the woods that we own. It'll allow our companies to expand into these resource areas to actually go out and collect the biomass that needs to be retrieved out of this community. We have an opportunity to build private timberlands. Yeah, so this will create a demand for BLM, the U.S. Forest Service, to practice their things for forest stewardship and for fire reduction and things of that nature. Talk about that for a while. This is an example of pictures taken around here of a densely packed forest that is ideal for a prescribed thinning, so we can get our spatial densities back to the appropriate levels that will allow the forest to grow at its optimal levels, reduce ladder fuels so it lowers the risk of fire and the magnitude of those fires. Okay, so if you look at the big picture as far as why we pick a site for a biomass site, transportation is huge. That is a large cost when dealing with getting the fuel to these plants. Your primary resource area, your goal is to have it be a 50-mile operating radius around your plant, so around the plant. You have to have a sustainable yield of biomass to make this thing even fund it to get it done. And again, I need to hit on the fact that we want to make the greatest positive impacts on the communities that we go into. That is very important to us. This is an example of a very healthy forest that has been harvested. Probably this is the third cutting on this forest. It speaks to the sustainability of biomass to produce energy. So from a macro view on the benefits of a biomass plant, you've got the job creation that this industry will bring. It is a clean energy, a very clean energy. The fuel is abundant and reliable. You're reducing fire threats and the cost to fight those fires. Right now, these projects are endorsed on the state and federal level, just shown through the incentives that they provide to build these plants. We're reducing our dependency on fossil fuels, and biomass is completely sustainable. And the other thing is, these biomass plants are not intermittent energy like wind or solar. These are baseload facilities, so they're producing power 24/7. As soon as you stick wood in the furnace, you're making power. It's on-demand power. So biomass power plants remove about 67 million tons of forest residual annually, reducing the threat of forest fires. And it shows you an example of the logging slash that we have out here, some spatial density that needs to be remedied on that side of the ground.
Would you back to that, please?
Sure.
That's the Western Oregon. Biomass power plants remove 67 million tons of forest residuals and from what?
National.
National.
National, yes. So let's take a micro look at what we can do for Lapine right now. This plant, this project, will hire 20 direct living wage jobs. These are very good jobs. And preference will be given. I don't know if I can say preference, but I want my folks local. I don't want to, there's no sense in bringing the folks out of town, putting them up. They need to be local people at this plant, and I'm going to make sure of that. There's also the significant number of indirect jobs that this is going to create, not counting the trucking and the biomass harvesting, but I mean, the people, you might have people at the hotels, the restaurants, all the ancillary positions that this job, that this plant is going to create. We're going to bring, we're going to be a gateway for other industry, attracting steam hosts to Lapine. So there's going to be a more opportunity for job creation. We talked about woods transportation. The tax revenue to Lapine. Okay, this is a potential enterprise zone. I believe it is an enterprise zone. Okay, so you're going to have, for 3 to 5 years, you're going to have a lower tax rate because we're only going to be paying the property tax and not the value of the plant, per se. But it's a trade-off between the 100 construction jobs and the revenue that we're going to bring in the initial 2 years to build this plant out, and then the jobs that we're going to bring to the community and the revenue that we're going to spit out for the remaining 3 years of that enterprise zone. That's kind of a trade-off that allows us to actually put the plant here. That capital saving, that capital cost, or that savings, goes right back into the capital cost savings of the project. And that's the trade-off that we have to do here. But after that, you have significant revenue implications for a tax base from the plant. We're going to be Mid-State Electric's largest customer for buying power. We're also going to have a relationship for them to wheel the power on. The whole reason that we're able to now move forward now is that we made an arrangement with the water district to acquire water, okay? And in order to do that, we have made concessions to upgrade the water district system and upgrade it to the extent that we are building that out to the year 2035. That's not going to affect any of the ratepayers in Lapine. BioGreen is covering that bill to make sure that those upgrades are met for the water district. We're going to be putting in the new well, new storage capacity, and larger diameter pipe from the existing, your guys' existing aquifer site down to our plant site. So the question is, why now? So we have an ideal situation with the broad acceptance of smart forest management. We have local, regional, and national focus on renewable energy. That's where those incentives are coming from. We have interests in reducing dependence on fossil fuel. It fits with this community's renewable theme. And I think that, you know, a good starting point is in Mid-State's building and bringing that kind of a industry into this town. The other thing is why it's important for right now is that we have a limited time for these incentives that we can capture that make these plants viable. So if I don't build these plants now, we lose those incentives and those projects are no longer viable. We have this window to build now, or we lose that incentive. And I mean, we have a 24-month construction schedule, yeah. And each day I'm coming up against that horizon. So it's very important that we build now. And with that, I'd like to let Larry discuss the project with you guys and give you a description here. Thanks.
He's happy to get rid of that.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Larry Jellison. Thank you, Mayor and Councilors, for giving the time for us to do a presentation. And ladies and gentlemen, we're first of all, not so late. It's past some of our bedtimes. The proposed plant will be what we call a 200,000 pound per hour boiler. That's how much steam will generate every hour. And we're going to fire a 19.8 megawatt turbine. That's equivalent to about 16,000-17,000 homes. The proposed will be plant sites in the industrial park right here in Lapine, and it will be directly across from the wastewater treatment plant right up in the industrial park. What this map is showing you is it's a map we put together showing you the locations of existing power plants and proposed ones. The red are the existing plants that are in right now, and the blue are the proposed, so you can kind of get an idea. And there's you. So you take a look, that there's quite a few all along here, and then if you got up further in Washington, you'd see some, and then you'd see some down here in California. And there's a proposed one possibly going in there. You can see that it's ready, and one going there. But out in this area, there's none. So we have a large resource that he was talking about on that 50-mile radius. That's why we're here, is that it makes us very desirable. Because we don't want to get over in this corridor. It's getting too crowded, or get down in here. It's too crowded. Very competitive. The process for renewable energy is an endless cycle. We burn the fuels in a boiler, which creates carbon dioxide that releases it back into the atmosphere. That's what trees live on. So they breathe back the carbon dioxide. Then we go in and thin the trees again. So it's an endless cycle that we keep this going in. And you can see this little vicious circle never ends. And I'll talk a little more about the emissions in a little bit. The plant requires 10 acres, and again, we'll generate 19.8% on electricity, and then 200,000 pounds of steam. We're going to consume around 150,000 bone-dry tons. That I think that equivalates to, what, Jim, about 20,000 to 25,000 truckloads a year in there is what we were figuring. So if you put it into a truck, that's how many you would let it run. Then we're going to require around 300 gallons a minute for water.
That was the number from the what they produce now. It's about half that.
About half that, so it would be about 15,000 somewhere down there. And so we're going to use about 300 gallons a minute for water, and that's why we talked about how critical the water is coming from the city wells up here, and how we were going to support putting in another well, another tank, another pump, all that. We're going to discharge around 50 gallons a minute. And it'll be kind of around a 90-degree water. It'll be heavy concentrates and minerals, but not anything toxic or anything bad. It could be used for sprinkling or right back into the city sewage. The components of the site is that we're going to have a 50,000 square foot enclosed fuel storage building. That's about equivalent to a football field. It'll be right around 90 feet high. All of our fuels will be stored indoors. We're not going to keep any fuels in big piles outdoors. There won't be any wind blowing fuels around because we want to keep this stuff dry. So we want to keep the rain and snow off of it. And then our other building is a 10,000 square foot building, boiler building, that's going to actually house the boiler itself. And it's around 90 feet tall. And then we'll have a smaller turbine building next to it. Then we have another little building that's about 2,000 square foot. That's where we do our water treatment. We soften the water down a little bit. And then we'll just have a tipping station to tip the trucks, unload the fuel. And then all of our fuel conveyors are going to be covered, so the wind won't blow the fuel around as they're being transferred on the conveyors. And then we'll have a small office out front. This is the site that we're building right now for Seneca in Eugene. This is that. This is a 3D model of that. This is the fuel building right here. This is the boiler turbine building. This all here is just for pollution. This is what we call an ESP, multi-cone. This is what our water treatment facility is going to work. Over here is the cooling towers. And you'll see those. There'll be a mist coming out of those, but that's not pollution. That's just a steam mist. This is where we cool our process water. There's our truck tipping bay. There's our hog, which will grind our material to size it correctly. And then all these conveyors are supporting the boiler. This is a plant that we built. This is in Hampton, Darrington, up in northern Washington. This plant is actually running right now. You can see the covered conveyors. These are the steam pipes coming out for their hose, which they have dry kilns for drying lumber. As you can see, there's no dust. There's nothing laying on the ground. It's very clean. And right here is the heat exhaust stack, which we used to call smoke stacks. And you can see nothing's coming out of that at this time right now. And this is an 11 megawatt back pressure system, similar to what we're doing here. This is Ferris Lumber. Some of you guys in lines where you might be familiar with this is another plant we're involved in. This is another 12 megawatt, but it's a condensing turbine, similar to what we're doing here. As you can see, it is running. There's a little steam leakage up on a bypass right here. And if you look at the heat exhaust stack, you can see the white smoke behind it. This is in full operation. You cannot see anything coming out of there at all. And this lumber here isn't what we're burning. So
Forgive me for this. This is very confusing, but I'm just going to take you pretty quickly through. This is where we actually burn the fuel inside the cells of the boiler. This is where we heat the water in these tubes, and then the steam comes out. This is our turbine that we're going to turn to make electricity with the generator. The reason I'm showing you this is that somewhere on that turbine, we have what we call these little extraction ports. They're little plates that we can take off. And this is what we're going to invite people to come in and buy from us. It's a secondary process, because we'll absorb as much of that energy of that steam through that turbine as we can, and then we'll extract it out, send it to somebody else, and they can use that heat for a secondary process. And this is what we want to track. Right now, it's going to a dry kiln, then we return the water back to us. But that's the only reason we're showing this turbo-looking graph. BioGreen will sell the power out on the grid. We're either going to sell it to a utility or to a broker. This is a business. We're going to go out for bid. We're going to see what bids we get. The electrons will never leave the area because it's not feasible. And all it really will allow us to do, if we sell it to a broker or something, it'll allow BPA power to pass us by. This power will probably stay here forever. It's just the way electricity works. BioGreen is going to and is now developing a relationship with Mid-State Electric. They're very interested in this project. And I think it, and Tim can correct me, I think by 2020, Oregon has to have 20% of their power produced from what we call green sources, that'd be wind, solar, or biomass. And then we will, as Rob said, we will purchase 1 megawatt of electricity from Mid-State. We'll be one of their largest customers. The steam is very critical to this project. We want to promote other businesses to move into the park, and so we can supply steam. And you can see that we can attract quite a range of, I think there's discussions going on there, possibility of wood pellet plant will locate next to us. We'll use the heat from our steam to dry their wood so they can make the pellets, because they got to bring that down to such a low moisture content. But we could even attract a greenhouse, you know, somebody that wants to keep it warm and grow whatever. And we can heat buildings, offices. There's one of these biomass plants that was located next to a prison, and they heated to prison with the extractions. The water. Water has been a task, but through Tim's investigations, we found out that we could actually use the effluent water from the sewage treatment plant in our process and recapture that. And that's attracted to us. And it says testing water now. We've tested the water. The water passed the test. We can use it fine. There's no problem with it. And then the water, wake-up water is pre-treated with organic and biodegradable materials. There's nothing that we can't dump right back on the ground. There's nothing bad that we add to it at all. And the wastewater, we're planning on just returning it back to the sewage treatment plant. Then later on, I think they pump it out into the fields for irrigating and stuff. And again, no heavy metals, nothing is toxic. And this will be all available to you folks to review. We'll show you all this information. And again, we're not starting discussions. We've been in discussions with the Lapine Water District, and we've determined the best solution so far. And that is heavily being discussed right now, and we're going to pursue that. The air quality. This is an interesting one, because some questions have come up about this, because in the old days, and I'm like Rob, I'm third generation lumberman, I've been around sawmills all my life. In the old days, you know, let's say 15, 20 years ago, at night we used to do what we call a stack blowdown. And what we do is put an inrush of steam and air up the stacks to clean them out from the little residues that hung up, and it blew black ash all over. So you'd wake up in the morning and have all these little black curfews all over your car. Well, we don't get to do that anymore. So, as you see, the particulate discharge limits in the last 10 years, we've reduced them by 98%. It's been huge. How we do that, we have many different kinds of electronic filtering systems that will grab this dust and contain it and bring it back into conveyors. And then we'll haul it back to a place like Rob runs now, that they can mix it back in with soils and make it for bedding or whatever they want to do, but it's just an ashy, real powdery stuff.
and that used to go in the environment. And what we do is we do an exhaust gas recirculator. We just keep, kind of like a catalytic converter in your car, we just keep burning it until it's gone. And then we do what we call a urea ejection. That's a system, there's a set of tubes in the kind of in the stack that detect if there's any particulates coming, and we inject this urea, which is a high intensity ammonia, and it causes a flash burn, and we burn that stuff off like that before it can get out. And the next thing we catch it with is what we call a multi-cone separator. It's a whole series of bunch of little cones that the stuff has to run through, and it'll run into it, and then it'll fall down, and the air will pass by. And then the four-stage precipitator is electronic, kind of like static electricity, attracts this dust on these plates, and then we clean these plates. And then the last thing is that the EPA requires us to have emissioning monitoring systems right on the stack. So if we start emitting anything into the air, these emission monitors will call the EPA, and they will definitely come out and talk to us. They'll find us immediately, and they'll shut us down. So it's 24-hour, we call it CEMS. And again, it's just real time. We can't discharge anything into the air. During this process, the DEQ will have us go through a very extensive permitting process. It'll take around 6 months for us to get this permit. And we have to demonstrate to the DEQ about what our particulate emissions are going to be. And then they'll set standards that we have to meet. And all the plants I've been involved with in the last 5 years, we always went past that, so we always cover our stuff. The one at Seneca has spent about $5 million more than they needed to make sure they'll meet their emissions. So just the emissions equipment will be about $11 million in the budget. And during this process, we'll be open to the public. The DEQ will have all this information available. We'll have town meetings, probably larger than what we're doing now. And it'll be open forum. People will come in, review the DEQ information so you can understand what standards are being set and how we're going to control it. And then we do what we call air flow modeling. I'm trying to hurry here because I know we're pushing time. But what that is, we hire an environmental engineer that comes in and does these models where we take what kind of particulates that we might be putting out, and we look at the meteorological data over the last 50 years so we can see the weather patterns. We do these things called isoplasts, where we see where these little things are going to move and who it's going to affect. And you guys are all more than welcome to see that, too. But we have to go through that. And more than likely, we'll set up what we call a PM10 monitoring station here. We'll monitor for a full year what the particulars are now, so that when we start up our plant, we can say, here's what it was, here's where we're at now, so that, you know, we can always tell where we've been. And then the DEQ, like I said, will set the standards that we have to live by. And they'll come in about every 6 months and make us do source tests on and above our constant monitoring system to make sure that we're meeting those standards. Traffic. I know this has been a question. We'll have approximately around 200 trucks per week, or 40 trucks a day, 5 days a week. Our dumping system in the mill, we're going to design it to dump 3 trucks an hour. So if we had a continuous flow of trucks, we only handle 3 an hour. So you're going to see about maybe anywhere from 2 to 4 trucks an hour driving around. And it'll only be during daylight hours, operating hours, you know, because they're up in the woods, they're coming in, and we're not going to do it at night. Noise levels, the plant itself is not noisy. There's no noise that will come out of it. The trucks, I'm sure they'll be, you already have city or in some J brakes or compression brakes. And we're definitely going to instruct all our truck drivers to use certain routes. And the routes are still open. We haven't done any of the traffic studies. And that's still an open discussion that we want to make sure that we're doing the right routes. So that's still open. Why will we succeed? And now that's wrong. Thank you.
No, thanks, Larry. Appreciate it. So the biggest reason why we will succeed is because we have a sustainable supply of biomass fuel to run this plant. We have the right people working on this project. If there is a project that's going to be done in Oregon, it's going to be done with Jellison, Wellens, and Bridgewater. And they're the right people to have working on these projects. We're willing to work with everybody here to make this project happen. I mean, and we proved that by our concessions we're willing to make with the water district and with the sewer district. And we want to have a collaborative effort with the city so we can ensure this project's success. And the other thing that's, if you already told me we had our permits, we would be breaking ground tomorrow. We are shovel ready. We are the closest thing to a shovel ready project in Oregon. And I think, I defer to Clark on this, I think it would be one of the biggest projects in Oregon currently.
It's the biggest project currently in Central Oregon.
That would have an opportunity that we could start as soon as we get our permitting. So beyond that, that's basically our project. And I'd like to take any questions you guys might have. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah. Good presentation.
We tried to do it 25 minutes, we didn't succeed.
Yeah.
It's an awful lot of information.
It is, but it's very, very well put together. Keeps a person's interest and probably, I think, it answers a lot of questions as you go through the presentation.
Well, Doug had a whole list.
Doug always has questions. Well, I can start with you, Doug.
Being the one that sits on the end of the table, I always get to speak first. Okay. Thank you very much for the presentation and for taking your time to come and tell us about this. We do appreciate it. A couple of my questions. I'm going to ask you two questions. I have four, but I'll just ask two and then pass on.
Yeah, they're all four written down.
I got some up here too.
But we'll take them home.
I'll just do two at a time and then we'll move. You already answered one of my questions about how many. I'm talking about when your plant is built and you're ready to start your operation. You've already said you're going to have 20 employees at the building itself.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and I understand 90 to 100 out in the field, something like that, cutting the wood and everything. Are the jobs in the plant going to be full-time, part-time, seasonal? Okay, I'm sure the jobs in the field are all going to be, I'll ask both questions, and then you can just answer them. And what kind of pay scale from the field, the people that are harvesting the wood, driving the trucks, the people that work inside the plant, what kind of a pay structure?
Sure.
Are you going to bring in people from the outside to man the positions in your plant, or are they going to be hired and trained locally? And then the equipment, the trucks, all the heavy-duty equipment that's being used out in the woods, is that owned by you, or is that going to be contracted by you to a logging company? Will you have control over who gets hired and who doesn't get hired and how many get hired? And will Lapine residents have any kind of preferential treatment in hiring over someone from the outside? And I know that sounds like affirmative action, but
no. Those are great questions.
If you could answer those two, I appreciate it.
Okay. Being a project that's supported at the government level, I can't say that I'm going to give preferential treatment to Lapine residents. What I am going to do is I'm going to be spending a lot of time in Lapine. My goal is that jobs are local here, and I'm the one that makes those decisions. So does that answer that question to an extent as far as?
That's just exactly what I expected you to say, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Doug, for instance, we were talking to Mark, I forget his last name, down the hall earlier, and he worked down at the mill at Beelcrest, and the boiler operator. He said there's several boiler operators from that mill. Boiler operators are going to be needed.
Yes.
At this facility.
Can I jump in on that one?
Good.
The experience level of this plant, we want to hire even a local plant manager. We want to hire somebody that's already in the community. We want to hire local people. If they have any resemblance of trainability, we're going to train them. And the reason I'm saying that is I'm going to be in charge of that. And I want to train these people. I don't want to hire another biomass plant manager. I don't want to hire another boiler operator from another area and bring them in. I would rather hire people that want to live here first. As long as they've got the brains to figure it out, it's not rocket science.
and they aren't stuck in their ways, we have them the way we want it to be.
Yeah. And I want to mold these personalities, these people. But the main thing to me, again, I'm a small town boy. I'd much rather hire that small town mentality. People that want to stay here. That's not, because I could bring guys in from the outside, and I've managed these plants all my life. And I can bring them in and they can quit in a month because they don't want to live in the pine. I don't want that. So, but what you hit it on the head is that we got affirmative action. We got a whole bunch of organizations out there. We've got to be careful about, and we got to open the doors to interview everybody. But yeah, there's going to be, we're going to look at that very seriously.
Then you had a question regarding about the seasonality of working in the woods. I'm working on right now trying to figure out the right process. We're already trying to figure out how we are going to be maintaining the roads in the wintertime. Sometimes it's advantageous to actually work on a hard pack of snow. And it's very important to me that we set up certain satellite locations that will allow us to run year-round. As far as the ways that we need jobs, we should almost publish something once we have that locked in.
I've already set the wages, and the wages are industry standard throughout the northwest. It's not just minimum wage jobs. It's a boiler operator here is going to make the same amount as a boiler operator does in Spokane or Seattle. It's kind of an industry standard. That's what the salaries are told. That's what we're going to pay these folks.
What's a worker in the field with a chainsaw gonna make?
You know,
what standard do you use for that?
Because more than likely they will not work for Viomin. Those will probably be subcontractors, and most of those guys work on whatever piece counts, or they may be JIPO type guys. We don't know that yet, but Rob could answer that better than I can. But most of those will be contract laborers, won't they?
Yeah, and a lot of that. I mean, that's a loaded question because it deals on experience. All those issues of how long you've been out in the woods. We own a lot of iron, okay? A lot of that iron is already being used to supply our current customers, and it's going to be used to supply the project we have going up in the northwest. So my goal is to blend out our own staff with our companies that we have now and contracting out the rest. So it's going to be a blend. I can't tell you the exact percentages yet. We haven't worked that out yet.
Was there another question?
Logging trucks. That was going to be contracted out.
What you said is basically all of the equipment and the trucks and everything will be a contract basis. You'll hire
Scott's
XYZ logging company to go out there and do that work for you. Yep. Then they will have the control over who's going to be hired to drive their own trucks and who's going to be, they will have that. Will you have any ability to give them any kind of guidelines or anything?
These questions don't all come from me.
No. Sure.
They're coming from people calling me on the phone put me here. Yeah. They want to know, hey, I'm an employee. Am I going to be able to get a job? Well, I don't know. Hopefully, yes. We're tremendously concerned that the people that live here are going to have equal opportunity to get a job in your plant as someone from the outside.
Yeah, I can promise you they'll have equal opportunity. I can promise you that. And you heard what I said earlier. What my preference is, and I can't speak for Bahrain, I want to hire local people because they live here and they're going to stay here. That's what I want to do.
That's especially important around here, too, because people move here for whatever reason. They spend one winter here and go, what did I do?
I'll snowmobiles. I'll come over anytime.
I have two more questions, but I'll pass my time to my esteemed colleague here on my left. And if my other questions aren't answered, then I would like to come back later.
Well, then,
thank you very much.
If not, Doug, give those questions to me, and I'll personally call you and answer.
Well, they're pretty easy.
Well, again,
but they may be answered.
And you have my card. Email me, and I will personally.
Oh, my wife won't let me use a computer.
Okay.
Or call me.
She can't drive my truck either.
Call me.
Okay. We heard boiler people. And who else would be employed?
Well,
what are the jobs required?
There's high tech jobs too. We need an electrician, full time electrician. And this is like running a nuclear plant. The operators sit behind a great big like 30 monitors, and they're all touch screens, mm-hmm. and they're running the entire plant from that point. Okay. And then they have a guy that's a chaser. So if there's a problem somewhere way out in one of the buildings, he calls that guy and he goes and gets it. Then they also have a millwright electrician. So we need this. So all these jobs are fairly sophisticated, you know, and, okay. and so, you know, and there'll be office help. We need some accounting help, you know, that'd be
two shifts.
Yeah, we run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Okay. So we don't shut down for Christmas, you know. We have.
Well, didn't the presentation say that just the you're operating during the daylight time, or
that's when the trucks are coming.
Oh, okay.
We don't want, they're not in the woods, you know, during the night, so they won't be coming anymore.
Okay. When you did your land use application, did the county require you to do any mitigation to our infrastructure?
We haven't done land use planning yet. There's still a question on zoning.
Okay.
So we have to get that settled, and then we'll start our land use plan.
Okay, and then the infrastructure needs would be addressed at that time? Okay. We'd like to make sure that we...
You'll be a big part of that.
Okay. Another question I had is about fire. Do you have your own response team? Or would you depend on the community for that?
We have our own response team.
Yeah. Okay.
And we'll have a fire suppression system throughout the plant. It will be fully sprinkled. So the only place we won't have fire suppression is around the turbine, because that's 13,800 volts, you know, and you don't want to dump fire. Mm-hmm. So if there's low fire in there, we have other ways to put that out with fire extinguishers.
I just have a question on water. Now, we had the Deschutes Water Alliance down here at last council, and they said that there was no water rights available to acquire. So I was wondering, where are your additional water rights?
With our agreement with the water district, they actually already contracted someone to find water rights.
Okay.
And since they've already decided to try and find water rights themselves, we didn't want to be redundant, try and find water rights separate. So instead of us trying to find water rights and pay for water rights, we're doing the infrastructure improvements, and then they're supplying the water rights.
Do you know who they're using?
It's somebody out of band that they're using for that.
Some consultant.
Okay.
Do you want us to get the name?
Would you
write that down?
And this is something that the water district was doing anyway. Uh-huh. They already knew they would need more water rights, but they're looking way ahead into the future and already anticipating that they would be accommodated.
And we did find some water. We didn't investigate it very deeply, but then, like Tim said, then when they said they were going to, we backed out, so there's a competing people.
Yeah.
And
let me see, I have one more. Okay, I was just wondering about the impact to the wastewater treatment plant, because from my understanding that we're at capacity now, and you're going to have some, water waste going into that facility.
We are planning on using effluent off the plant, and so we hope to use at least as much or more water coming from this wastewater treatment plant as we're putting into it.
Is there going to be a holding tank or anything? Is that going to be necessary?
I don't think so, Tim. Correct me if I'm wrong. Don't they store the water like all winter, and then they sprinkle it in the summer? They're not going to do that after we start up, because they're going to discharge the water to our plant. Is that correct?
Well, it'll be about even, because we will be taking 50 to 75 gallons a minute, and then giving them back 50 or 50 gallons a minute or less.
Yes.
So... in theory, they should end up with less water.
Okay.
But we have to keep monitoring the mineral content, because we're going to be putting water back that's got a little higher mineral content. So they may still have to sprinkle in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
We're hoping they won't have to increase their sprinkle capacity like as much as they're planning, because even before we came along, they were planning on doubling their sprinkler capacity on the BLM land that was just deeded to them. So we're hoping they won't have to do that as much, but we're still doing, we have lots of calculations to do between the boiler manufacturer and studies on We know we can use the effluent, but we have to study what our discharge to the ponds is going to do and how that cycle is going to affect the pond.
We're going to work on this, and we don't have an absolute clear answer, but it's a work in progress. But one good thing, this is good for the camera, there's no nitrates. That's for the next meeting that we're going to
do. Well, you know, I think that we're really excited about the possibilities, but also because we are such a small community, you know, we, I think that we have to be really cautious and really make sure that all of our concerns are addressed.
Well, and one thing, I was going to wait until you're done, but Ron and I talked about it, and we would like to invite you all to go on a tour. And we'll go see one or two biomass plants so we can tour you guys through it. So you can report that back to the people, you know, mm-hmm. here in La Pine. And you know, we just got to get it organized. And we want to, you know, put that invitation to you. Because so I'm with you. I if I lived in a little town, I'd be equally concerned. But education helps with that concern. Yeah.
Okay. You're on.
Are there plants open, like if I wanted to go to Eugene out in Seneca and see the plant?
Well, if you go to Eugene right now, you just see an empty field.
Oh,
we
already checked it out. It ain't there yet.
But you know, as soon as we start, I'll take you there. But what is going on is we're just finalizing our air permit. And we cannot put a shovel into the ground until we have that air permit finalized. And it's taken just about 5 months at Seneca. And then we're going to start. We'll be starting turning dirt about the end of September. Mm-hmm. And then we'll start pouring concrete in October, November. And then the first building will go up about December. So, but the plant's not going to start for about another year and a half.
Okay. Our area is much better than Eugene's, so.
Yours yeah. will be prettier. I'll make sure
that. It won't be yellow like that picture.
No, it won't. You guys pick the color.
Are you a union company or any of your plants union?
We're not a union company.
Okay, good. and the president wants me to ask, do you have health plans?
A health plan. Obama president?
Yes.
Yes, there will be a health plan.
Okay.
Yes.
And can you change fuels?
That's a very good question, and I'm glad you asked that. And what we can do in the future, our permit is only going to allow us to burn certain blends of fuels, and they'll mostly be, you know, stuff that comes out of the woods or out of a sawmill, and what we call a byproduct of uh-huh. those things. What I have done, in Michigan, I helped change an air permit on a biomass plant where we did a blended fuel, where we put in a tire recycling, where we ground up tires, and they can put 10% ground up tires mixed in with their hog fuel, so we can still stay within our air permit, and we can get rid of those tires, because those are really good BTUs. You know, and that's another thing, when we have a change in an air permit, if we say we're going to go after those fuels, we have to announce it to all of you, we have to have an open forum with the public, and we all have to discuss it. If the local community says no, it isn't going to happen.
Okay.
So what we permit for, and
just to clarify, there's no plans in doing that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Right now, our permit is only going to require us to do woody biomass.
Do you have plants that do use animal? I went online and I was looking
manure.
At this that manure
yeah.
and poultry and different.
Yes, I have personally burnt manure. And the problem with burning manure is keeping moisture out of it. If we can get it down to a moisture content, there's some people that have actually spread it out and during the summer and dried it out. But it's really high in BTUs. It's a very good, but it's a straw based. Mm-hmm. And most boilers cannot burn a pure diet of straw because it's high in silica. And what it does is it glasses the inside of the boiler and it shuts down the air grafting systems. Mm-hmm. So we really have to do a good blend, like a 10 or 12 or 15% blend with woody biomass.
Would that be something you'd do like in the Midwest?
Yeah, they're doing it in California.
Okay.
We're going to find it down in Sacramento that's doing that. There's quite a few people
okay.
there. Yeah. But manure's good.
All right. I believe that was... Oh, another one. Do you encourage your workers to go to school to train so that they could move up in the plant?
Yes.
Yeah, I would say absolutely. I mean, okay. We want people that are qualified and motivated to advance in the company.
Do you have a plan that would pay for that?
I don't have a plan right now for any of that right now.
Okay.
I can answer that because I'm going to help inside it out. It's going to be run similar to my company. Any of my employees that want to better their education that's going to add benefit to the plant will pay.
All right.
Like an electrician that needs to go to a PLC school to bring skills up because we've got new PLCs, we'll pay for that.
All right.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Those are good, very good questions.
Yeah, thank you very much.
On the air quality thing, the other biomass plant that wanted to be coming.
I love those plants.
Well, they were having a real problem with having something to do with getting, I don't know exactly how to word it, but it had something to do with the air quality all the way down to Crater Lake.
Yeah.
Have you come across that?
No, is what we call those isoplasts. I think I can't speak for the other company, but I can say what I think. I think the other company got their cart ahead of their horse, and they were trying to do a lot of things internally and not hiring the experts to do it. We've hired Bridgewater Group, and the lady's name is Candy Hatch. She's the leading environmental engineer in the Northwest. She's the best at writing DEQ permits, mm-hmm. and when she walks into a room with DEQ, they all know each other by their first name. She understands the rules to the T. And she has already looked at this and evaluated this area and said there should be no problem with this obtaining our air permit. And she's going to stay on staff until we do this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And we would more than gladly bring her to one of these meetings when you guys feel like, yeah. When you want to really be
I understood.
Grounded in technical crap.
Yeah. Back then, they were having a real problem, something well, proving that they weren't going to contaminate the air all the way down to Crater Lake, and I was just wondering if, I'm hoping that there won't be any snags like this that are unforeseen that might hold up this operation.
Yeah, that's a good question, because when we first started this process, we started talking about using the effluent water. DEQ and Ben heard that we're going to do that, said, no, there's nitrates. You can't do that. You may make the nitrates airborne. So, see, DEQ heard through the grapevine. We hadn't talked to them, but that's the same thing. That probably happened to them. Is they started saying that they're going to build this plant without talking to the DEQ, without obtaining this air permit, and then the obstacles started getting put up in front of them.
Okay.
Where we talked to the environmental engineer, she's already talked to DEQ, and there hasn't been any obstacles.
So she's probably bringing up every possible thing to them now.
Yeah. And that's a whole other presentation we gladly do on what we're going to have to go to meet the DEQ requirements.
Okay. Okay, now what I'd like to do is ask staff if they have any questions.
I have two more real quick ones if I can.
I'm the boss here. Your turn is going to come. You called me boss earlier, remember? And I said I'm not, but I'm rescinding that. I'm boss. Staff questions, and we'll just go all the way around the table.
Thank you.
How much supply are you going to need on hand at all times?
That's another good question. That big football field you saw, that huge building, that's about a week and a half. So we will not have more than 2 weeks of supply on the plant site at one time.
Okay, so with that in mind, you have to wait your turn. With the winters that we have, how are you going to be dependent on
that's what he's going to
do. And 6 feet
under
snow.
He's got that
answer. The satellite locations that we've chosen right now, the prescription on how we're going to harvest, we'll probably cut this wood a year in advance, and we will be decking it. So there will be properties that have
log decks.
Huge decks.
But more like brush decks.
Brush decks.
Oh, okay, log which decks. Brings me to another question, and I can understand that.
Yep.
How are log trucks going to get brush deck stuff in?
That's a good question, too.
There are ways that you can retrofit haystacks.
Okay.
And different methods to collect that efficiently. Probably what would happen with brush like that, if it poses a problem for transportation, we would actually grind it up in the woods. and then we bring it down to where it needs to go.
Okay, so which brings me to my next question. Is there a certain dryness that the material has to be in order to burn it? And if so, if it's already shredded or hogged,
sure.
How are you going to get it dry if it's been sitting on deck?
What we have found, it is horrible to haul water. And when you've cut fresh timber, it is pretty heavy and it's wet, especially that younger pine. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to drop that stuff probably, I mean, you can do it 3 to 4 months in advance, drop in the spring, let it sit through the summer. You can bring your moisture content up to the optimum levels, which is probably 55-60%, and you're good to go. So it's all on how you process that timber that gets you that moisture content that you're looking for.
Now, you're talking of log decks. What about the marketable timber out of that log deck? Are you going to burn it?
Markets dictate that. The main thing we're focused on is the responsible stewardship of that ground. So if we find that the market calls for windbreaking energy and it's the lumber market is down, we're going to still have to make sure that we stay at those spatial densities that we require for responsible management of that ground. But the market's going to dictate where that flow goes.
Okay, that was all I had.
One question, look on your moisture content. Our boiler runs optimal in about 40 to 45%. That's where we'd like to be.
What if the wood is too dry?
That's a good question, though, because what we do have a problem with flexion, and we don't want it. If that dry stuff falls down into those cells, it's like taking a handful of really dry sawdust and throwing it in your fireplace, which a lot of us have done that. So not a good idea. You know, same thing. There's just this explosion flash, and that's not good.
Because it can get too dry.
Yes, but this fuel house has 4 rake-off conveyors. We're going to sort the fuels by dryness so that we can do what we call blending. Mm-hmm. So if we get some of that really wet stuff at 60% moisture, we're going to blend it with some of the real dry stuff so we can get that optimum of 40 to 35%.
Okay. Patty, did you have any questions?
Well, probably just to follow up on Doug's is that you're going to contract or subcontract out for your wood cutting and the logging trucks. It's going to be probably subcontracted out. Will that be something you'll put up for bid, or do you already have, you know, a working relationship with?
We have, with a couple of folks, we have working relationships, but we are definitely going to have to put some of these projects up for bid.
Okay. So the chances of a Central Oregon... the opportunities for a Central Oregon company to bid on it, it's going to be pretty good.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Thank you.
Douglas.
Okay. Final two questions. backup question. Backup question on water. You're going to be pulling 300 gallons per minute out of the ground strata. My next door neighbor wants to know if that's going to cause his well to go dry.
I'll be honest with you, I'm not a geotechnical engineer. We are bringing a geotechnical engineering firm in to evaluate the aquifer and see what levels that will do. And if we hurt that aquifer, we won't locate it.
Well, I'm assuming that you will go very deep with your wells. Most of the wells around here are like 40 feet. They're real shallow.
Yeah, it's whatever the I think it is a very deep well, but again, I'm the wrong guy.
So you would be down below. Yeah.
Whatever they tell us here to do, and if the water isn't, if we drain it, we don't want to do that.
How long, what's the lifespan of your facility?
The first plant I built was 32 years ago and it's still operating.
Do you have a time for, we're going to build this plant and it's going to run for 25 years and then that's it? Or are you saying you're going to build it until the wood runs out?
We build these plants to accommodate that 50-mile working circle, what we can sustainably draw on within that. We size it because there's 40 megawatt biomass power plants in the world, but if we built one for 40 megawatts in that circle, then our two circles double. And those little ones, and that gets uncomfortable. That's a little too much for this area. So we size this right at where we know that we could easily keep the fuels coming to that plant. Did that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, well, the concern was, from a couple of people, was, well, are they going to come here, build a plant, run it for 20 years, shut it, and leave town?
No.
And leave an empty building sitting there on an empty lot?
No,
was the question given to me.
Yeah, our cash flow performance models are based on 20 years.
Okay, and then last question. what, as a company, what are you willing to contribute to the city of Lapine in the way of sponsoring a little league team or something like that?
I think you just bought two streetlights, didn't you?
I
guess I just bought two streetlights.
Yeah. We bought four, you bought two.
It's important to know that I want to support this community, and for us to come in here, this is going to be a collaborative effort. I mean, yeah, if it means sponsoring a little league team, you bet. If it means supporting the high school, you bet. I want to do programs like that. I need to make money. I mean, I'm in business to make money, and I have to operate this as a profitable business. Outside of that realm, you bet. I want to be a part of this community, and I know I'm going to have to make concessions to do that. And I hope I prove that by what we're willing to do with the water district and things of that nature for this community. So, yes, I am going to be a part of this community.
Yeah, good. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Those are good two questions.
You didn't like my first two questions.
Are you going to live here?
I will probably have a home here, yes. There will be a couple, there will be more than just this project going on, so I will be very, very busy boy, but I will probably have a home here, yes.
There's a few of us that will almost live here for 2 to 5 years.
Yeah,
I'll see an awful lot of it.
Yeah. You'll meet my kids,
Adele, did you have
I just have a comment. I'd like to thank Mr. Jackson for his efforts bringing this to our community.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Barbara, anything else?
No, nothing else.
Do we have any questions from the audience? I think we pretty well covered it. Okay. And before we do that, I wanted to say let's think real carefully before we ask a question. If you already heard that question and that answer before, I think we pretty well covered it. But yes, what do you have?
My question is, you had mentioned in a previous presentation that you did at the chamber that you would be using urea or possibly ammonia to do some additional heating of the plant if you needed to bump up the ability to heat. You know, if it wasn't hot enough and you needed it to get hotter for whatever reason, that was an option. And I've been looking on the internet, and that is something that biomass plants use, is urea or ammonia. That is not organically very friendly to humans or otherwise. How would that be affected in the sense that, okay, if you have to use urea, if you have to use ammonia to increase the capacity of the heat of the fire, how does that break down and then become part of the mineral content or the debris content, the waste content that would have to go back through the sewage company and then maybe back sprayed to the land? And I'm not sure if I'm asking this technically correct, but this is about as good as you're going to get from my
it's a good technical question, and you asked about 10 questions in that, but I'll answer it the best I can. The urea ejection system is a heavily diluted ammonia. We buy it out of California, and we dilute it with water. And where it's injected way up into the stack. There's these sensors that probe in through the stack to see if there's any particulate, and if any particulate comes out, it shoots a little shot of that urea in, and that flash, and it attaches itself to that particulate, and it flash burns that, it just vaporizes it in the stack. So it never returns back to anywhere. And if it goes anywhere, it'll end up going through the ESP and be dissolved completely. So, and our usage is very little. We don't use very much of that because we cleanse it through most of the other process.
It's a pollution control
measure. It's a
operational measure.
And if you want to look it up, it's an SNCR control for pollutants in the stack at urea ejection. And again, you guys, if you want, I can send you literature on this stuff. And I invite you guys to, when we go through the other plants, look at that urea ejection, look how we store the ammonia, you know, how we handle that, and ask questions.
If you could get that to the council, I could get it through to them, from them.
You bet.
Would be great.
I'll send information on how that urea is injected, how it's handled, and then the impact. And if you want, we can even give you what we call an MSDS file, which is a material safety data sheet. I can even give that to you.
That would be great.
Yeah.
I have one other question. Am I entitled?
Go ahead.
Okay, when you're harvesting wood, that is going to affect any time you harvest forests, period, whether you're taking debris or not. I am not totally sure that, are you only taking debris? Are you harvesting real trees sitting up there, and how is that going to affect the ecosystem that forests provide for not only humans but animals? And I'm not putting the animals ahead of the humans at all, or ahead of jobs or growth or economy, but everything is involved in that ecosystem. So are you just going to these forests and saying, oh, there's all these dead trees, there's all this old shrub, let's get that? Or is some of this going to be like, for lack of a better example, I know this is more extreme, let's just tear down the forests that and put developments in, but then it just messed up the entire ecosystem that then comes back and bites the humans as much as it does the rainforest. You know how they just sort of went in and demolished. I do not want to see biomass plants, not just this one or any of them, go in and just really affect, well, we need the fuel, we need wood, so let's just chop these forests down. Are you really just cleaning them, or do you have to do the trees as well? And how is that going to impact the whole ecosystem?
Okay, so this is a man-made problem right here on poor practices back long, long time ago.
No, I understand
that we're dealing
that.
With right yeah. now as far as why those trees are spaced like that. You guys remember the pictures back in the early 1900s where there's a logger sitting on a tree that's 6 to 8 feet through and there's the right spatial densities? We can get back to that. And the way we're going to do that is we do these prescribed thinnings. So you're not going to go in and clear cut a forest, knock it all down. You would kill your sustainability. That would kill these projects. You cannot harm that sustainability. We want all the logging slash that we can get. So you also asked, is this going to strip out the land? We're not going to leave anything to biodegrade and have habitat for wildlife. Is that part of the question, right?
Well, it's not just habitat for wildlife.
Sure.
It's the sustainability of a healthy forest. You just don't want to not have a healthy forest that still helps the water,
yep.
the runoffs, and you know, and just doing the whole thing, because when you strip them, where not only do the critters live, but where do you have the rest of the us humans get affected
just
too?
Just the process of going out and collecting biomass. Let's just take it out fitting. We would space those trees about 22 feet. That's optimum spacing for a healthy forest. So we wouldn't take any more trees from that acre than that spacing would allow. As far as collecting the biomass in the woods, you have rakes, grapples. They don't strip the ground. They don't take everything away. The mechanics of it, they can just grab the stuff big enough for a machine to grab, and the left is left there for so it can decompose, and it does provide the habitat for the wildlife. So the process in itself isn't what you might be viewing of the old clear cuts and just totally taking it down to bare dirt. That's not what we're doing here. And sustainability, I can't put in a $60 million project unless I run it sustainably.
Talk about stewardship.
Oh, the stewardship projects. Okay, so let's talk about public stewardship that the Forest Service is proposing and will open up because of these plants. What they'll do is they'll be setting aside, let's say, a 50,000 acre block of ground, and then they will be signing that contract to a logger or a clearing guy to manage that ground. Those foresters are going to go out and they're going to make sure that this is what we want this place to look like. You have to follow it to the letter of the T. You have to remove that biomass a certain way. You can collect so much volume off those acres that you have a stewardship for. And there's a revenue transaction there that you have to pay for taking that biomass off of that ground. There's also an opportunity for those stewardship programs in private land ownership, and in a very big way on private land. And it's going to be addressing issues like you see right here. And it'll be, you know, these contracts are going to be 10, 20 years. And that's how we're going to make this thing a success.
Over the, that's a very good question, because 100 years ago we did the bad thing. We did go into the rape village, took whatever we want, and we created this. And over the years, the environmental movement was very strong and pushed the larder back and said, okay, you're not going to do any of the Forest Service land anymore. That's what happened. So now the Forest Service, nobody wants to go do anything. Now we've got this rat nest that is a fire danger that's a lot of problems. So now the Forest Service steps back and says, well, now we don't know what to do. So they're in there. So what the Forest Service decided to do is offer these stewardship programs and give it back to the loggers and the people that know how to go in, and the state licensed foresters who will go in and monitor these guys as they go in and clean these. And they get these stewardship programs for 10 years to do these healthy forest acts, go in there and clean it up.
So once, Mary, we could go on and on and on, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm not a forester, so.
Right, this is a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
I think the real gist of your question is, are you going to go out there and just get rid of the forest, or are
no,
you
that,
going to
I knew they weren't.
Okay.
No, that I knew.
Well, let's not go on any further with this. We do still have more items on our agenda.
Can I say one quick thing, Mary?
That you think might
help.
Yeah,
Mary, take my card, write me a letter, ask some questions, and we will write back to you.
Sounds great. That's what I was going to suggest because it sounds like she could probably sit and have a you know, back and forth with you for about 2 hours here. We don't have that kind of time, I'm sorry.
No problem.
Any other citizen comments or questions? Was there any other little last thought you wanted to leave us with?
Just really appreciate you guys' time and working with us on this project. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you being here. And boy, I can see the wheels spinning already. You guys have all kinds of things now to add to your presentation with.
It's fun.
It's a good presentation anyway. But
do you have any other community meetings in the pipeline?
You know, we have talked to our PR folks about how to present our ideas to the folks, and I think we're going to offer, I think, probably a picnic and a barbecue.
Oh, okay.
And come in, and then it will be more of an open forum where we're going to be approachable, and individuals can come and talk to us, and maybe some of us, we will get on our podium and ask answer technical questions. And that's, if you guys have some good ideas, we're wide open for that, but we're kind of thinking about it.
I'd like potential applicants, people that have experience in the boiler operation and whatnot, to if you guys know people, or start forwarding people to us.
Okay.
I'd appreciate that.
Because we can use them through the construction period too.
Yes. All right. Thank you again.
Thank you, guys.
Very informational. A lot of good information. Okay.
You guys are welcome to stay for the rest of the council meeting.
That's my bed.
I think we should.
Thank you, folks.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
Good to see you, Clark.
You too, Keith.
Thank you.
Are you caught up, Patty?
No, fine.
You sure? I'll give you another minute.
No, that's fine.
Okay. All right, then. We'll move on to number 7, selection of council representative for the Pine Intersection Analysis Meetings. And was it 2 weeks ago we got the brief little synopsis or overview of Deborah on our the Pine Intersection Analysis meeting that was held on the 7th. Thank you. It was an excellent, excellent meeting. Lana and I were there. Did we have a little counselor? I think we did.
Barbara.
Yes. You were there. And our... Okay. Her memory is even worse than ever. She just had a birthday. our stakeholders meeting. Anyway, one of the things that came of that is that we will want to solidify this actual stakeholders group. Who is going to be the council
representative who will attend all of the meetings of this, what I call a working group of the of those who own the project, our traffic mitigation project, which is the county, ODOT, and the city. And of course, Leahy is part of the county, and so they're in there too. So, those four groups, entities, each need a representative that will hopefully be able to attend all of those stakeholder group meetings and keep the ball rolling on this.
Do you have any more information when, how many, that kind of thing?
Well, I think what I got out of it was that we'll each choose a representative, and then those people will get together and decide how often they will meet and what their course will be.
So, were you considering the position? Or?
No.
No,
I don't have the time. I wish I did. But
they'll probably be daytime meetings.
Yes, they will. Oh, that's the other thing. Yes, they will no doubt be daytime meetings because, you know, this is part of their job. These are government employees and they're getting paid mm-hmm. for this, except for Leahy.
Well, I would be really interested in this because this intersection, you know, is one of my interests. Mm-hmm. Are you going to be going to the Moana?
If I'm told to, I'm staff.
Yeah, what we want is a council representative.
I think Barbara would be a very good representative. You wouldn't want me dealing with ODOT and the County Road Department now with all the interactions I've already had with them.
Oh, well.
That would probably would not be a good idea.
We'll just take that from
I think Barbara would be an excellent choice.
Adele, do you have an interest in or time?
I do, I think.
I think Adele would be an excellent choice, too.
Well, I agree with you. It's not kind of...
What are your job?
We have to watch them battle it out here.
I just think that, I don't know,
I might vandalize your house.
And as with most things, we would no doubt have the primary and the... secondary, you know, who's going to be the primary mm-hmm. Representative, and when that person can't show up, then it will be the other. So,
I just think that maybe my municipal experience would be beneficial in this position, but well, I'm not going to say anymore. I'll let you guys decide. I know, it's kind of...
It's nice to know when the, you know... Actually, I guess you're both pretty flexible time-wise. So
we both want to do everything. So
I know. It's so valuable.
Well,
now,
we could both go.
I was just going to say, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
We could, decide who is going to be the... We need a contact person, a... named representative,
okay.
And then the alternate.
Okay, I'll be the alternate then.
Okay,
yeah.
So the named representative then is the one that will have, you're the go-to person if a question comes up between meetings or whatever.
Uh-huh.
You're the one who will be passing on information that comes from the council to the meetings, to the stakeholders group. But yeah, there's nothing wrong with both of you going to every single meeting. Because
we work as a team.
Huh?
We'll work as a team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. Because you wouldn't have a quorum. And, okay, we can do that.
Excellent idea.
Do you have to vote or get a consensus on that? Or
I don't know. We've voted before on forming our...
When are we going to do these other committee things, too?
We were waiting for the fifth counselor.
Well, let's just pull him out of the hat, or her.
That's right. Oh, actually, I had suggested we wait on this one, too, but... We can't wait, and actually, I'm more comfortable... I wouldn't want to bring somebody new in who doesn't have the background on where we've been
and some of the conversations and everything, so we'll just move forward with this. To be on the safe side, we will go ahead and vote, make it official on making Councilor Hedges our council representative for Lapine Intersection Analysis Meetings with Adele as the alternate. Do I have a motion?
I would so move.
I'll second it.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Councilor Ward, yes.
Councilor Molina, yes.
Councilor Hedges, yes.
Mayor Shields, yes. Motion passes unanimously. All right.
Now, are you going to COCO also?
Mm-hmm.
Are you on that?
Okay. Next item is the approval of changing the local government investment pool bank to to a local bank. Uh-huh. Whatever. And Ron will bring us up to speed on that. I believe we have a...
I'll try to make this fast. Basically, we've got a local government investment pool in a bank. I couldn't for life of me tell you even where that bank is. We transfer money in and out of it. It's direct deposited from our property taxes. We have an opportunity to have it localized through our Community First Bank out of Pineville. I think this would be beneficial. Everything's the same. It all works the same.
The more local, the better.
Yes. So I just need approval, I think.
Where is that one located?
In Pineville, I believe. Main branch.
We don't have
We have one right here, but I believe that the investment pool on this would be out of the Pineville branch.
You mean the one where it is now? Or?
No, the one here in town.
Oh, okay.
Is that?
Community First, right here.
I don't.
Just
right here. No, back here.
Okay.
Not that way. I'm in a building. I'm backwards. So I just need.
All right.
Do we have any other questions or discussion on that? Nope. I think it's an excellent idea. Is everyone ready to vote?
Yes.
Yes. All right. I would entertain a motion for approval of changing the LGIP bank to our local Community First Bank.
I so move.
I second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. I'll have a roll call vote, please.
Councilor Ward, yes.
Councilor Molina, yes.
Councilor Hedges, yes.
Mayor Shields, yes. This motion passes unanimously. Okay. Item number 9, temporary liquor license sales application. Homestead Tavern and Luana has some changes. Are the changes in your staff report, or do you need to update them?
No, I just got those changes today. Actually, the application for August 7th, they're canceling that event, the first application. The second one for September 4th has been changed to September 11th. And in regards to the incident at Homestead Tavern that is in the report, they wanted us to know that they did cut him off after two drinks and he was being watched. And the reason the police were called was because they could not remove him from the premises. He wouldn't leave, so they had to call him.
And that was me that could not remove him, and that called the police.
So, with that, if you guys want to make some conditions on the permitting process, that's up to you.
You have to acknowledge, be acknowledged by the mayor, not by me.
She's not looking at
me. Sorry, go ahead, Councilor Ward.
Are you associated with Homestead Tavern?
Yes, I am.
What is your position there?
I'm a bartender.
You're the bartender.
I am.
What exactly happened?
Well, everything was going pretty good. You know, we had it outside all roped off, security on both ends. We just had a bad seed who has been recently in and out of prison. Happened to get out. He was kind of conversing with a few people he hadn't seen in a while, and we knew him from before, you know, to watch him carefully. And I warned everybody else to watch him carefully. And he just got a little bit out of hand. Now, myself, personally, only served him one beer. Now, where he goes and beyond that is, you know, beyond our control. We don't, but we monitor him as he came back. And then I cut him off, 9:30, 10 o'clock, and said, you know, I don't know where you've been. You're causing problems. Let's not go there. Well, it was 1 o'clock in the morning when he finally decided he wanted to cause some problems. And so I tried to handle it myself. When Carol was knocked to the door, the owner, Carol Rabel, that's when I just picked up the phone, called the sheriff's department. You know, we tried to handle it on our own, and normally we don't have to handle anything like that because we don't have those problems at our little tavern.
I've never heard of them before.
Never.
Understand that, yeah, that we have two responsibilities, as far as I see it. One is to make sure that we do everything we possibly can to promote profitable business within our city.
Absolutely.
That's your job. And the other one is to make sure that we have a safe environment for people who live here and people that may come through. So my only question in concern to voting yes or no on your application, and I've voted yes on all the ones in the past, is do you have a plan that maybe if this happens again, that you have a plan of what you can do, what you would do?
We're going to have extra security this next time. Of course, we're probably only going to do this twice a year in the summertime. You know, outside, our building doesn't accommodate more than 75 people mm-hmm. indoors, and so that's why we've applied to go outside. You know, twice a year. But we plan on having extra security on this next one.
Okay,
not
good.
That it would even be needed, but
well,
just in case
you never
we
know.
Do.
Thank you
know.
Very much. Thank you, Mrs. Mayor.
All right, any other questions, comments?
I have. Oh, do you have?
No.
Okay. Where was the security when this happened? Why did you have to take care of it?
Well, because I was inside, and it happened inside. We had security on both ends on the outside of the building as entering in the gated off area, you know, from coming from the Lapine Inn into our building on the back side and coming from the front side in. This happened inside the tavern itself, and that I was behind the bar.
And you just, how many security people did you have outside?
We had probably 4 or 5 people. Bud Kendall, the owner's friend, Dean. We had a couple of Mad Clown security guys there that just kind of look after us as a business. You know, they're from around here. But big enough guys that they can take care of that. John from 31 Junction, he was on one corner.
Then I would assume that station somebody inside.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But I personally don't think that will happen again. You know, it's a pretty tight-knit little place. We never have any problems. That's just it. Galen just happened to be out of jail and wanted to cause some problems and is now back there for a long time.
Will he be back in jail during this event?
He's already there. He's there for the duration.
Was he on probation or just...
He was. He was, but nobody knew that.
There.
Well, nobody
yeah.
knew that. It's not our job as, you know, bartenders to
know if he's on probation or not. If we would have known that, he wouldn't have been allowed there. You know, I mean, it's one of the things. He got out here a couple of months ago, and personally, he's 86, you know, for life, but I know for a fact he'd never be back anyway. He's in for a long time this time.
Well, he had a good time when he was out.
He said, I wouldn't really call that a good time being tased.
You're restricting the hours, or
It was a suggestion. After more discussion with Carol about the incident, it's up to you guys. I believe some of the issue may be from another place of serving alcohol, without naming a name.
Okay.
But, and that is
so now you're not recommending the
restriction. And I will vouch for that. I know exactly where that's coming from.
And there, that's an area where that problem would exist. Someone served at one establishment, walk right next door to another one, and you don't know.
You don't know what they've been served.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, this sounds to me like something that would have happened, could have happened. It happened pretty much independent of the event that was going on anyway. They weren't related, I don't think. So,
yeah.
And
looking back at the, you know, as a bartender for, put it this way, I don't think I would work at the establishment next door due to the mere fact that there's constant problems there. Mm-hmm. We are a little daytime establishment for the older generation, and that's where our business stems from. We're trying to build, you know, a business and try to get a little more nighttime activity in there. You know, we have a ladies' night. We have a little karaoke thing on, you know, we allow the Texas Hold'em poker players, of course, no money involved, you know, but... Well, you know, it's that one little tournament that takes place. Well, I wouldn't even want to play if there wasn't any night. Anyway, so, you know, we're trying to build the establishment on a nighttime basis. And like I said, this isn't something that we want to do on a monthly or weekend, you know, basis. We just want to have, and what we're calling it basically is the last chance end of summer dance. You know, I mean, it's just something that we want to have one more time before summer ends. And, you know, and like I said, there was no problems until one person caused a problem. Of course, it was later in the evening. He was already cut off for 2-3 hours. So,
yeah.
You know, it shouldn't have happened. Unfortunately, it did. And, you know, but we just want to try it one more time and build our security a little bit more and have it not happen again.
Well, I'm ready to vote.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, I have no problem with it.
As long as you have somebody inside.
Oh, absolutely. There's two bartenders inside. Inside.
I'm a little concerned why the liquor board hasn't done something about the Pine Inn long before now. This is not something that's brand new, okay?
No, I know it isn't.
Everybody, you know, they're right up the 25 miles up the road.
But you know what my problem is that when people associate us with that, we're no part of that. That's a totally different atmosphere, crew, clientele. I mean, you know, we don't like to single out the younger, but we like to bring in the older.
And La Pine Inn, just for the record, is not here to defend themselves. So.
No.
It's not here to defend themselves.
Oh, well, that's true.
But regardless of that, I think the explanation of what happened and where it took place is enough to satisfy me that it was non-related anyway to the event that was taking place. So, all right then, I will entertain a motion to approve the temporary liquor license sales application for the September 11th event for Homestead Tavern.
I would so move. I almost forgot what to say.
I'll second it.
Been moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Councilor Ward, yes.
Councilor Mullanan, yes.
Councilor Hedges, yes.
Mayor Shields, yes.
Motion passes unanimously. If you need to drop it by tomorrow, you can pick it up.
I'll swing by and pick it up on my way back.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all very much.
Taking your time to come.
Well, I like the biomass.
The whole thing.
That was a good presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Next item is number 10, other matters, 10A. That's right under. I thought I wanted it to be. Do that to myself all the time. Okay. The agreement for the Community Wildlife Protection Plan.
With authorization.
It's not, it's finished the plan. It's not an agreement.
Huh?
And you said agreement. It's just a plan.
Oh, agree to,
plan.
Agree to, yeah.
Getting late.
I was late when I got here. I didn't get to sleep last night. Okay, declaration of agreement. I'll figure out how I want to read this motion. Okay. Okay, I had it underlined here. What they want is for us to agree to the Community Wildfire Protection Plan. That's what they're asking.
That's exactly what I had written down. You said last night.
Oh, did you just read that off to me?
No.
Okay. All right. I will entertain a motion for the council to agree to the Community Wildfire Protection Plan with authority for the mayor to sign. And Adele will follow through on getting all the steps in place.
I so move.
I second.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Councilor Ward, yes.
Councilor Mullanan, yes.
Councilor Hedges, yes.
Mayor Shields, yes. Passes unanimously. Well, Greenfield there. I didn't remember if there was something that we still had to have the attorney look at. Oh, it's been a long 58 years.
The next ones will be even better.
All right. Item number 11, public comments for items not on the agenda. We have no commenters out there. I like that. Item number 12, staff comments.
I have one. Just want the council to know that we received a phone call from McDonald's, the office in Bend. They also have concerns with the students crossing Highway 97. They also noted that they wanted to rebuild, but the burden was too heavy. For example, the traffic light. And that's why they chose to remodel, to avoid that. When we're ready to seek funding, though, they are... have offered to look at traffic counts, reevaluations. They're willing to give testimony regarding safety, sales volume, traffic, and economic purposes. So they will be there to help support whatever is needed to get that light in place.
In not exactly those same words, but that's... Can we pin them down a little more?
They won't fork out any money for it.
Yeah, I mean, can we pin them down to some more precise wording?
What was wrong with that? Not enough?
Oh, was that you saying they'll help us with the traffic light, or was that them specifically saying that? Did they specifically say they'll help us with the traffic light, or with the traffic?
Traffic
problem?
Counts.
Yes.
They will help. They will offer testimony and reports, anything that needs to be submitted to help support the getting the traffic light in.
Right, that's what I thought I heard.
Yeah.
Okay. But they're not going to throw any money our way.
Didn't sound like
they
it.
They didn't say that.
No.
Okay. I don't think there's a whole lot we can do about that. Sheets County pretty much only told us that.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Can I mention something just sort of related that I just thought about?
Sure.
The McDonald's called today and said they're having a grand opening and love to have our mayor and any other councilors there on August 25th for a ribbon cutting at their
August 25th
open at 10 o'clock. I forgot until you mentioned McDonald's. I think they're planning to have French fries or something like that, yeah. Because they're going to open right away after
the date it was
after that.
And Ronald McDonald will be there?
Ronald McDonald and McFun guy. And
the picture of the mayor is having a Ronald McDonald's one.
Oh, I got to get that for a book.
Yes, indeed. All over that one.
I can't do 10 o'clock. Oh my gosh. We'll send Mayor Pro Tem. He can sit on
Personally, I think that falls under the anti-corruption corruption rule.
And I like your coffee. So.
Okay. Now, this is the kind of thing Pam passed on that they would like for all the councilors to be there. This is the kind of thing that we can do. You can attend events. You can have all of the counselors there as long as you don't get a quorum of you together and discuss any city business. Don't discuss any city business or anything that's going to lead up to decision-making or anything. But all of us can go to an event at any time that we want to, as long as we're careful about that. Well, okay. I will try to be there. See how that works
I think he'll be contacting you and was going to ask you to make a little speech.
Okay. I know, I need to be more positive about those things. I'm just not the speech-making type. That was all you had?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Adele?
I don't know.
I've called her Patty several times tonight, so I'm good.
No, don't worry, Patty. You do not look like me.
Thank you.
Actually, my maiden name was Lopez, so.
See? There you go. Okay.
And what does that mean?
Don't ask.
Council comments.
The TAG meeting for this month was canceled due to conflicting whatever. The biggest thing on their agenda is the county roads department is looking at the feasibility of putting in a roundabout at Burgess and Day. That's
great.
I don't know why.
That's going to mess up the fishermen.
Oh, yeah. The first guy who goes through there with a 45-foot motorhome is going to have a real life. Anyway, that's next. As far as Luana and I attended the Liggy meeting.
Luana.
We were there, too. And biomass does have a zoning problem with state land use. Evidently, somebody found something in the contract or something stating that we couldn't have a electrical generating plant unless it was run by hydroelectric water power in the
industrial park.
In the thing over there. But the county planning department says they'll fix it. So that's not to worry about. Everything else is pretty much the same. Bear Mountain Forest Products makes, you know, they make the Presto logs. They want to go in next door to biomass. And Habitat for Humanity still wants to go in there. And somebody came to town and was concerned about putting in a movie theater in the
business
place over here. But the code won't allow a movie theater to go in an industrial park. So they are looking for some place to go, which would be a very attractive addition to Lapine.
I would think that doesn't Weimar have some property there next?
Well, it doesn't belong
to them. Is that still available?
It is. Out front is or someplace out there.
Well, I was thinking, the codes say that you could have like a deli to serve food to the businesses that are in the, mm-hmm.
why couldn't you have a movie theater with an attached deli? Anyway, that's and the big plan right now for the going across the street for the kiddies to McDonald's is that ODOT is going to put some traffic cones up like this.
Good.
And that's going to scare all the drivers and slow down. That's all I have to say. That's why I don't want to have nothing to do with it.
Well, we'll see how all that works when they do it. And this is, they say they are going to do it?
My question with you, they are going to put traffic cones. My question was, the first time a snowplow goes by, where's the cones going to go?
That was just one of the options, I thought, that could be.
They better be thinking about doing something.
I don't think it was just those big movable cones, though, that they were talking about. It's another kind that's built in, I thought.
No, they said they were going to be temporary cones. Oh, that's what they said. I don't know.
Temporarily. Yeah. I guess we'll see if they do anything.
Yeah, they'll make them permanent.
All right.
Okay, really fast. I went to the COCO meeting and they handed out the legislative summary, which we've seen, I'm sure, before. They've also, at that meeting, endorsed a program that was interesting. It's called Bank on Central Oregon, and it's a program in partnership with the Partnership to End Poverty, and it's offering... is lowering the financial requirements for establishing a banking relationship, like in a checking or savings account. So I think like the minimum is $50 or less. So that is, and all the banks in Central Oregon have signed on, with the exception of one small community bank. And so I have a flyer for you, Luana, you can distribute. Maybe get people on the know about that, and that's it.
Right. Barbara.
I haven't been anywhere this last week, so I have nothing to report. I am going to be the primary person for COIC, evidently. I'm not too sure how I feel about that. I'm not getting a lot out of those meetings.
Didn't someone else say that? Well, that's kind of what we're getting out of the rail
stuff, aren't they? No. Rail, we weren't getting anywhere with that. It's like just going to a meeting and...
Like the Co-Ed Rail, I think, would be a good meeting to attend.
COIC is mainly what's going on in Bend and Redmond and Madras, and their businesses, and helping them out.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're interested in La Pine, actually.
That's the way the rail meetings are going. There's the interest in La Pine isn't there. It's all in Prineville because of the railroad. And
do you have possibility at the meetings to create an interest, build an interest?
Not really. It's kind of a set agenda where they have maybe four people coming in applying for funds things like that. And
but we have voting power at that.
Right.
For and that, so if something local comes in.
Yeah. So I've only been like three or four, and I have had nothing to contribute.
Oh, well, that's
so. So, I'm not sure.
Did we get the agenda beforehand to decide whether or not to go?
Well, I haven't been getting them.
Do you want
think to Jenny got them.
Oh.
So do you want to be officially dismissed from that?
Well,
so do I.
What about seeing to it that you do get the agendas? I'm sure they must go out in advance.
I talked to Sharon. She wanted me on a conference call, and I had an appointment in Bend, and she wasn't too happy about that I couldn't change it. But yeah, so I will be getting, I'm sure, the agendas from now on.
Okay. Well, do you want to
I'll stay with it. But
I, you know, I would suggest if there's nothing on the agenda that
I'll go that way.
You already have the experience to know that you just go there and, as you said, you have nothing to contribute.
I think we should send Adele. She's good.
Well, I think that COAC, the rail business, I think that for La Pointe, I think that would be a good meeting for us to attend with all the action and the, especially with the biomass plant and all of that business and, you know.
Who goes there now?
They won't stop. Mm-mm. The train will not stop in this
right.
town.
We were talking
no, they won't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's no point in trying to beg them to.
They want
to
build a switching yard, okay? The BNSF, but they haven't. They don't want to build it here.
Yeah.
They want to build it somewhere else. They were looking at Redmond. They were looking at Prineville. There, but they don't want to do it here. They have a siding here, which is just real small, little Mickey Mouse thing, but. They don't want to do anything here at all.
Then maybe we'll change their mind.
Possible. But, you know, billions and billions of dollars they've got to spend is they're being real particular. That's a terrible amount of money to spend. It really is. You think building a highway costs a lot of money. You know, try building a switching
okay, car. Okay, so is there any purpose in going to these or COAC rail?
I haven't been.
Okay.
I look at the agendas and sometimes my time frame doesn't come out anyway.
It's
kind of early,
8:30. Well, maybe I'll consider.
Well, I go to the the regular COAC meeting every other
month.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but it's in all honesty, it's a waste of my time. It really is. I mean, it's a preset agenda. Everything is already preset. There's no crumbs being thrown our way, and I get to raise my hand, and that's better.
Yeah.
It's not hardly worth the price of the $20 for gas to drive up there.
Is that one of those that we have a voting membership?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. COAC is the rail, yeah. Isn't it?
COAC. But
COAC, yeah.
Okay. So, if you don't go, how many meetings do you miss before they kick you off and then we don't have a voting membership? Or has it been beneficial to us even to have a voting membership?
Well, I brought that information back about the ODOT plans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was beneficial. It's not going to do anything for us, but it was beneficial.
Yeah.
And I don't mind going. That's not a problem. But, but in all honesty, it's really my wife takes me out to dinner afterwards. That's the best part of the whole deal.
So you're saying you're going to continue going there?
Well, yes, I will continue to go and live up to my obligations, yes. But it's really a kind of a waste of time.
And who knows?
I'll go. Maybe lightning will strike.
Every once in a while you might come back with a map.
Maybe, yeah.
Okay. Do you have anything else?
No, I don't.
Well, let me see. I had a couple of things here that are in no particular order. City of La Pointe projects list. As you know, we moved that, our projects, and publicity. Priorities, goals, and publicity plan from today's agenda. Boy, it's a good thing we did.
Mm-hmm.
We're really busy.
Mm-hmm.
What's
going on the 12th agenda?
Okay, it'll be on the 12th. And are we also then going to have DMC have Deborah here?
Yes.
And this is going to be part of going back into the whole projects and priorities thing. We're going to look at it. A little closer. As you know, none of us was really happy with the, I don't think I have that in front of me now, projects. Oh, I do have goals with proposed priorities that we were supposed to adopt.
Oh, that was a while back.
So this is what we're going to be talking about on the 12th. When you guys, does anyone want another set of this to review it?
We gave it to them, didn't we?
Did you?
Oh, was
well,
it? Yeah, back because we were going to put them out
in the next packet.
But
they're right there in the office. I think
if you want to pick those up and look at them again, and or wait until your packet comes out. We'll be working on that. Hopefully, get goals with proposed priorities put together in a form that we want to adopt. And behind that, another layer of that will be our City of Lapine projects list that staff has been keeping updated for us as we go on anyway.
Do we have to read that 100-page packet again?
Yes.
The thinking is forgotten about it.
No. Okay. What else did I have here? Oh, everyone should have gotten the FYI. So this was just so that to keep everyone up to speed, so that we know what is going on with the
who's on first.
Yeah, who's on first with the stakeholders group. Yeah, with the not traffic light. Not calling it traffic light anymore.
Traffic analysis. Intersections analysis.
Yeah, intersection analysis stakeholders group. Can anybody, I know you might be interested in a copy of this thing. You can put out my copy. I have another one at home.
Great.
So are they going to, do you know if they're going to let us review the scope of the work?
Oh, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And see, like I said, this the stakeholders group, the city, county, which also includes Leahy and ODOT, that is, and this is the one you guys are on, you're the primary, this brings you up to speed on what where they are right now.
Okay.
This is just simply the core working group of the agencies that own the project, and then it'll broaden out. You know, that you'll have your organizational meeting, and you know, I'm sure choose a chair and all this kind of stuff, and start getting. Jeremy's going to put together the MOU and everything that'll help define everyone's roles, and then you'll start putting together a plan, which is going to include getting a consultant and so on. And it's and the consultant, I assume, will, once you get that far along, will work with you to determine at what point we bring in public input and all that sort of thing. But that's what, see, we will be asking the questions later on. The two of you will be attending the meetings and
having
the answers for us. And for the public, you will be the, you're the go-to person, the information person, once you start attending those meetings and keep us up to speed on it all the time. So that's what that is. And anyone else have a calendar? I think that's all I have. Wow.
Very good.
Long meeting. One more time around. Anybody? Anything?
If anybody wants to come on the radio in the mornings, Tuesdays would be a good time, 7:05 at our station here in town. Just to tell the world what to think about this stuff.
I don't get paid enough to get up at 7:00
in the morning.
We had you know, Representative Gene Wisnett on Tuesdays, so people kind of know that the government morning or whatever. So.
Okay.
Are you nice?
Oh, yeah.
They're fun. They're nice. They're fun and they're informative. You should tune in and listen, and then you'll see if you want to go. But see, you're on the road then. I'm at work then. That's a hectic time for me. Luana found out one time when she came by a little too early on the wrong day.
Yeah.
We have a special show if
you
want to schedule it some other time, too.
You could take it and put it on.
Yes, we could.
Do you just ask questions, or do people have to come with a script?
No, it's just very easy stuff, so there's really not a lot of preparation. We do have a phone line, so if people want to call in, and we can talk all on the radio, too. Mm-hmm. So it's just be kind of a status thing, you know, what's the current activities, what was the recent agenda items, what's coming up in the future, you know, what priority things are being talked about, you know, just whatever.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we can come up with a counselor volunteer for you and
once a month or whatever.
Oh, a little radio show.
Sorry.
Coffee.
Well, it's not television, it's just radio. We only have like 3 or 4 listeners, so no worries.
There's coffee if you want to.
Maybe I'm going to bring it over.
Are you going to?
Oh, I'll talk to you later.
So the invitation is there.
Okay.
For anyone who needs.
Okay, I'll take you up on it.
Right.
Tuesday? All right. Mm-hmm.
Let me know when you're time enough.
No.
My alarm clock.
No.
Oh, boy. By the way, you can...
So now we'll have
it by the internet.
Bring your projects list with you.
Okay. Yeah. And the only way you can get it on the internet.
All right. Well, thank you, Tony, for reminding us again. We need that.
Sure.
No, it's great. It's a great venue. And it'd be good if we get someone to take advantage of it. All right. If there's nothing else, then we shall adjourn at 8:22. Thank you, everyone. Don't fall asleep on the way home.
Yeah.
So, what do you think?
Well, I think it's.